You're listening to Panel Borders on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is Resonance's weekly show about the world of comics. In today's show, continuing a month of episodes looking at webcomics, I'm talking to a quartet of creators whose online strips and cartoons reinvent retro images and iconic characters from film and TV to beguiling effect. Later in the show, in a pair of short interviews recorded at the Thought Bubble Festival in Leeds last year, I'm talking to American creators Scott C. about his webcomics, Double Fine Action Comics and The Great Showdowns, and Becky and Frank about Tiny Kitten Teeth, cartoons which utilize imagery from toys, cereal packaging and children's literature. However, before that, I'm talking to British writer-artist Paul O'Connell about the varying merits of print and web-based comics in an interview recorded at the University of Brighton. Paul's postmodern fumetti mashups mix horror and comedy via strips such as A Muppet Wicker Man and The Seinfeld Matrix, and we're talking about his collaborations with other Brighton-based creators, including Lawrence Elwick on Charlie Parker Handyman, and his aspirations for using the medium of online comics to its full interactive potential. Before that, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner. FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
I'm talking to Paul O'Connell, the creator of The Sound of Drowning and various other independently published comics and web strips that are available on the website of the same name. I'm talking to you today because I've been doing a month of shows about web comics, and you seem to be a creator who is not only comfortable in having comics produced both digitally for the digital realm and in print, but also perhaps tailor certain stories for each medium.
Ah, do I? Generally, for work, I've been thinking, I think of print. I don't really think of things just going on the web, although occasionally that has happened. And occasionally there's been a couple of things where I simply lacked the money to make print versions, so I've had to put them out as web versions. That's generally the rule, to be honest. It costs a lot. Printing costs a lot. I don't have much money, so yeah, necessity dictates.
Because, I mean, in terms of the strips that you give people free access to on soundofdrowning.com, the shorter works, you've just got them embedded in your site, but the longer ones, there's kind of a virtual book on a site called ISSUU, which I guess is a good way of distributing longer comics online.
Yeah, I suppose when I was first putting things online, and I disliked that way that you would have to click to go to the next page. I found that a bit, and then wait for it to load.
Yeah, I can't stand that.
No. And so I liked issue. So when I was put my things, the shorter things, you just scroll down. So everything is on the same page. You're just scrolling as you would a page of text. And I preferred the way that felt. And then for really long things, because it would make a huge loading time for a page, I discovered issue. And I liked the way the pages felt when you turned the page. It felt almost like turning a page as opposed to clicking a link and loading a web page. But technology's moved on now, and you have that now in touchscreens. So,
because I guess in a way you have two different audiences, perhaps. People who read your work in print, whether it's newspaper comics like The Comics Reader or the now late lamented Stall Pigeon, which had an excellent comic section, or people who have clicked a link on a site like, say, Forbidden Planet International to look at the digital version of your work.
I'm happy to have readers however they come to me.
But I mean, when I was thinking of comics that perhaps, for want of a better phrase, work better online, things that have gone viral, and I hate using some of these modern terms, but things that have gone viral perhaps, which are available on your website,
in particular seem to be the sort of Fumetti mashups you've done, like Muppet Wicker Man and the Seinfeld Matrix, which seem to be very much, if not tailored for a digital audience, but certainly appreciated for, because perhaps one of the aspects of the internet that we think about is the idea of reappropriation of images and using them for different means.
Yeah, with those they were, they were online. I mean, I made with the Muppet Wicker Man, there were a few copies that I made for friends at Christmas, and then I just decided to put it online afterwards, and it was quite a while after that someone, I think ain'titcool.com, picked up on it, and suddenly it was everywhere. Which was nice. There's lots of people who got to read it that, you know, otherwise wouldn't, and people enjoyed it. It's good. I made some people happy. I'm pleased.
How do you make those kind of Fumetti mashups? Is it a lot of Photoshop? Do you have to find videos and get stills of particular images?
Yeah. Basically, yes. It's really labour intensive. I mean, for that Muppet Wicker Man, there's probably 500 odd stills and things that are taken from Muppets and the Wicker Man, and going through them to make them all fit together. Yeah, it took a long time, actually. Never again. Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of my way of working, though. So,
although once you found the appropriate images, how long does it take you to construct a frame or a page for one of those comics?
About a frame with the sign. I've never really timed it, but when I did the Seinfeld Matrix, I did time it, and it took about 5 hours a frame.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's 48 pages of 3 frames a page, so that's a lot of hours.
So it actually takes longer than if you were drawing it.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah.
Because I remember when I was listening to Dickens' interview with you, so that I wouldn't repeat any of his questions, and you said that you like doing these kind of collage comics because you don't like drawing, but actually it sounds like it's even more labour-intensive than if you did draw them.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but I still, it's the way the process feels to me is much more enjoyable. Yeah. I like working with other people who like drawing. Yeah, leave the drawing to people who like drawing.
Yeah. I mean, occasionally, you know, it seems that you do a swap. For example, your collaborations with Daniel Locke, you wrote Green Sea Days for him, and then he wrote Spring the Hare for you, which you draw. So is that nice in a way that when you have a collaborator who normally draws for you, occasionally you get to illustrate one of their scripts?
Yeah, I've done that a few times with other people's writing. I really like working with other people's writing. It's like a bit of the responsibility removed, you know? You just have to get one part right, not just both parts. That's an enjoyable process. And when it works vice versa, with Lawrence Elwick, who illustrated the Charlie Parker Handyman. You know, I love seeing them come to life as he draws them. It's a humbling experience because he's such a good artist.
I mean, with something like Charlie Parker, it's obvious how the two of you divide the work between you. You write the script and he draws it. But with, for example, the Seinfeld Matrix, I noticed that was in collaboration with Sean Duffield. So how did that work in terms of collaboration?
That was, we both kind of wrote the script, but separately.
Okay.
Yeah. I seem to remember that I did the kind of, like a larger skeleton of it. And then some of the bits he did more intensely of the dialogue, or kind of more did the detail of the scenes. That's how I remember it happening.
But then you still had to do the 5-hour creation of each panel.
Because there were some bits where he'd written it, and there's the bit where I just, you know, in the Matrix, Neo does that lean backwards, and Sean came up with the idea that if it's George Costanza, he'd be doing that, but going, oh, he'd be complaining about his back. And I'm like, yeah, that's really funny. I have no idea how I'm going to do that. And lots of it I was looking at going, yeah, nice idea. How am I going to make that work? But somehow I found a way through it. Yeah.
Do you worry at all about copyright issues with something like that? I mean, there is a clause in law of fair use and parody, but
yeah, no, I don't. I don't push it either.
Or make any money off it, no, which I guess is the one sticking point.
Exactly, yeah. Well, yeah, again, I thought that with Muppet Wicker Man. You know, I thought, there's no way I could do that legitimately. You know, I'd never either be able to get permission or be able to afford the rights to use the Muppets or the Wicker Man. So you've got to do it under cover of darkness.
After Muppet Christmas Carol and Muppet Treasure Island, it seems the logical conclusion to the trilogy.
Well, yeah, I think people would like to see that. Yeah, I think that's why it proved popular, because people would like to see the Muppets doing something a bit edgier. It would be great, wouldn't it? There's probably lots more ideas there.
Both as the publisher of Sound of Drowning and a contributor to Paper Tiger Comics, you're very much part of the Brighton small press scene. I mean, how long ago would you say it was that you and Sean realised that there was such a creative hub down here and that you guys should all work on each other's projects?
I don't think there was ever any grand plan like that. I can't remember what years. It was sort of early 2000s, around 2003 or so. We started to sort of make contact with each other. Like, I met Dan Locke and Lawrence Elwick at a Cartoon County meeting. And I met Sean via a record shop, and a friend that we had in common who ran a record shop. And yeah, we just started sort of meeting each other, and then people would throw around ideas. And I think now people are more into... It seems to, at the moment, that people are more working on their own projects, so it doesn't seem like there's that kind of collaboration going on at the moment. I really enjoyed that time. It was a few years where, yeah, it was very nice and reciprocal, and it was fun, which I think is an important thing.
You need to get the band back together.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm here, guys.
And what's really interesting is having you as the writer and so many different artists as collaborators, there's a massive range of different styles out there, whether it's sort of Lord Herc's more experimental satirical strips, Lawrence's kind of cartoony artwork that harks back to, say, you know, 1940s Betty Boo cartoons, or say Neil Evans, or should I say Nelson Evergreen's more traditional illustrations, which are used by sort of agencies and other clients in children's books when he's not drawing comics.
Yeah. That's another aspect that I've really enjoyed, of getting to work with such like ridiculously talented people, you know, really good artists. So it's quite an honour when someone wants to draw something that I've written. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, like I mentioned, Lawrence's style kind of harks back to sort of classic Americana and culture. Mm. And it seems that seems to be very much a leitmotif in your work, in that kind of like David Lynchian style, that you take 1950s, 1960s American culture and give it a sort of dark satirical twist, you know, looking at the underbelly of American society, as it were.
I have done, yeah. I have done that. Yeah, it's not kind of where my head's at now, but yeah, I have done that. And again, that was sort of fun doing that. I suppose if I did that for a while, I do try to kind of to keep myself interested, come up with fresh things and reinvent things. So yeah, I don't have anything else like that planned at the moment.
You managed to exorcise
that. I've exorcised it. Yeah, a lot of it is about exorcism. Yeah, I think I have. Yeah.
When I got in touch with you to ask if you'd be up for doing this interview, you mentioned that there were some new projects that you were working on that were very much to do with new technologies. Can you expand on that at all, or is it still so much a work in progress that you don't want to...
Well, you know, I'm happy to expand on it. It may never happen, but it's the plan at the moment. It's quite a large project. I mean, most of the things I've done have been relatively small, and this is big. It's big in scope. And it's the working title at the moment is called Where the Trees End. And it's about a lot of things. It's a really hard project to describe, but essentially the spine of it is the story of a British psychiatrist from the latter 20th century called William Sargent, who was a pioneer of physical treatments in psychiatry, so drugs, ECT, things like that. Quite dark. And it's, yeah, I have both plans for it as a print, as something in print, although I think a fair amount of it's probably unpublishable. So my own means of publishing, which would be digitally, which, because of the way it works, and it doesn't work in... Because it's a book you can read in any direction, in any way you like. It doesn't have any kind of traditional structure. You can read it like a normal book, and it works. But you could also read it backwards, randomly. You can follow paths through it. And that kind of thing lends itself to digital medium. And then other things that you can access through the pages as well. So being able to access... Because it's all based on fact, you can access references directly through the pages. And I also like the idea that with a digital book, and particularly if you're talking about in the future and kind of books as apps, they can constantly evolve. You can update, you can add pages. Someone buys the book updates itself as new bits are added. I love that idea. I love this idea of, a book that grows, a book that evolves of its own self, its own accord. So that's kind of what I'm working on at the moment.
Okay. And when do you think we might see some preview pages?
I don't know. It's really hard work and it's slow going, and I've got pages that I could put out there, but taken by themselves, I'm not sure they make a lot of sense. There might be something out there soon. Some preview pages, but it won't make a lot of sense. I tend to work on things quietly, and then when they're done, then it's just boom and it appears. Rather than putting out little bits, I don't tend to do that. I'm not sure why, just habit maybe.
Cool. Well,
because you never know if you mention something and then it just falls flat on its face. And you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't put that bit out there.
Five years from now, there'd be a whatever happened to.
Yes, exactly. And now I'm making that happen. I'm setting myself up for the fall. It's taking up a lot of my time, and it's taking a lot of time to work and come together. So it's why I've been quite quiet recently and not putting a massive amount out there.
Although, on the first of every month on Forbidden Planet, .co.uk/blogs website, you've been previewing pages from a new comedy spoof version of Look In called Look Out that you're curating.
Which was all Herc's idea.
Okay.
I hold Herc totally responsible for that. But that was fun. Lots of different people drawing their sort of childhood TV programs, sometimes from reference, sometimes from memory. I quite like the ones where people... have just drawn. I think he looked like this. I'm not going to check. I'm just going to go with it.
If everyone else thinks he looks like that as well, then that's fine.
Then that's all right. Yeah. No, that's fun. And some of those have been great. Yeah.
Cool.
But that's Herc. Yeah. And Forbidden Planet kindly putting it out for us.
Awesome. Well, I guess people need to keep visiting soundofdrowning.com and hopefully.
I need to put some little bits up there, don't I? Yeah. I need to keep it updated, I guess. I will do.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Alex.
For more information about Paul O'Connell's comics, please go to soundofdrowning.com. Next, here's my interviews with Scott C. and Becky and Frank.
Your work is kind of a combination of the kind of retro images that we probably, I mean, you're too young, but I kind of knew. I kind of knew as a kid, sort of leaking out of the end of the 1970s, a mixture of kind of kitsch and fairy tale type storytelling. And you've taken that kind of imagery and updated it to the modern day using, I guess, a bit of satire. Could you talk a little about the roots of your web comics and what made you want to work in this industry?
Well, we started the comic after I left school, and basically I had just started painting with gouache, and I really liked it, and I found it, for some reason, be quicker than doing digital coloring. Maybe I was really bad at it, but I decided it'd be interesting to also just do a completely painted comic, because I hadn't really seen many of those before. And at the time, I guess still now, like I was very influenced by like Golden Books and like Mary Blair, who did a lot of concept art for Disney, as well as Dream Pets, which are these Japanese toys from the 1960s that are really colorful and simple shapes, and they're all just like different animals. Do you have anything to add, Frank?
I think it was like some of just like our influences at the time. Like we wanted to create something that we could kind of was sustainable, like in an online format. Because for me, like I grew up in New Zealand, and no one else really did comics. Like I had a couple friends who made them, and like the idea of putting it on the internet in the first place was like that was the only thing I could even think of. Like I didn't even think of putting it in print in the first place. Yeah, I think that's about it.
But it's interesting though, because your work is still very analog. You're obviously using traditional art materials and then scanning them in. So it's not so much that you wanted to explore the digital realm in terms of the tools, it was more of a distribution thing.
Yeah, it is. And like it like definitely poses like some issues for like storytelling, like especially in the comic, because like I see it in a page by page thing, but like then there's like the whole like theory of like the behind the fold kind of thing, like when you're scrolling through digital comics, and I've kind of like consciously like veered away from that with a mind towards like putting it in print. But like yeah, I guess like the primary method of distribution is still the internet. But maybe we don't take it on. Maybe we should put some like animated GIFs in our comic or something like that. No.
I was wondering also while I've got you, if Walt's Kelly's Pogo was an influence.
Oh yeah, like yeah, Pogo's wonderful. Like also like Tove Jansson's Moomin is like a huge influence on us. For me personally, like P.G. Woodhouse was huge. Who else?
I'm trying to think, like, with regards to Pogo, like, I guess I was very influenced by Bone, but I hadn't read Pogo until, like, I think this year when Fantagraphics, like, released the collection of Pogo. But I guess, like, sort of as being influenced by Bone, I was being influenced by Pogo and just had no idea.
Yeah. Next, we have Scott C., whose work is often known under the title of Double Fine Action Comics. You come from a background of computer game design, I believe, but your comics are the very kind of traditional newspaper strip format, at least action comics are. Could you talk a little about how you got into making web comics?
Yeah, I started making comics. I'm from San Francisco originally, and we did a lot of kind of comics, like mini comics together. It's my friends and I at Lucas. I used to work at Lucas Arts with a bunch of guys, and we used to do this comic called Hickey Comics. Which is an anthology of just funny comics. Really hilarious. And we would go to the shows and stuff. And while we were working on, when I left Lucas, I was working at Double Fine Productions on a game called Psychonauts. And that was like, it took about 5 years to make that game. So during the process of making that game and not having a product, not having something to show people, you know, and working the same thing for hours and hours during the day, I felt like I also needed like an outlet, needed something, an escape a little bit. So I started doing the Double Fine Action Comics as like when I would get to the work in the morning, I would get there before everyone and I would have my little time, my little hour that I would spend just doing a real quick comic, just super quick strip. And Tim, Tim Schaefer is the boss there, and he had the idea to post it on online, on the website, as a way to kind of, as like a goal, I guess, you know? And so, and changing it every single day, so you don't have to worry about the joke being funny, you don't have to worry about being that great, because the next day you'll just put a new one up, you know? And that was like, and doing that 5 times a week was like a real amazing outlet, and it helped me get over the blank page problem that I always, would always have, and then I could get into doing concepts for the game, and I could get into doing the rest of the stuff, and overall I felt like I'd been released all this stuff in the form of these comics. That's how I felt about these comics, that's why I was doing these comics, so... so that's kind of like how it started, and then just kept on going since then. And along, Tim was also using the news section of the site as his outlet. Like he was using it as a diary to kind of put stuff out and say, "Hey, I'm still alive." You know, it's like 5 years we're working this thing, but we're still alive. We're still coming up with stuff. So that's kind of why we started doing that. And
it's interesting. We were talking. Earlier about using traditional tools to make comics. In particular, your Versus comics often are taking the typical fanboy, to use an offensive word, question of who would win in a fight between, you know, Godzilla and Mighty Mouse or whatever. How did that start? About the fact that, you know, you're doing these very sort of child-friendly images on sort of watercolor paper.
This Great Showdown series started as an art show in LA called Crazy for Cult, which was just artists doing their own versions of artwork created inspired by movies. So these were always just like little moments just within the movies. It wasn't necessarily versus other movies or other things. It was just memorable moments that I just really enjoyed, and I really wanted to make them kind of little small, bite-sized versions of them. So it was only later that people, after doing a few of these shows, that someone suggested putting them on Tumblr, because I hadn't heard about Tumblr before. And then it was so easy to put these things up, because the Double Fine Action comics were just on the site. It was like I had to go through these loops and hoops to get them on the site, right, I feel like. But Tumblr was so easy. There's a built-in community behind it and everything. So it's been amazing. So that's kind of been taking a lot more of my time, is the Great Showdowns. And I just like working in watercolors. That's kind of what I do. So it's a nice way to chill out.
For more information about Scott C's work, please go to his website, pyramidcar.com. That's pyramidcar.com. And for more information about Becky and Frank's work, please go to their website, tinykittenteeth.com. Like Paul O'Connell, if you're a listener to this show who's based in the south of England, why not come along to Crawley Wordfest, a literature festival based in a small town near the south coast. On Tuesday, the 26th of March, I'm hosting a panel with Myriad Editions creators Corinne Perlman, Hannah Eaton and Nye Wright, discussing the mythological in their graphic novels, Naming Monsters, and Things to Do in a Retirement Home Trailer Park When You're 29 and Unemployed. That's taking place at 7:30 p.m, Tuesday the 26th of March at Crawley Library, Southgate Avenue, Crawley, RH10 6HG. You can find more information about Crawley Wordfest at wordfestcrawley.org, and you can find more information about all events involving Myriad creators at www.myriadeditions.com/events. If you're a London-based listener of the show, why not go along to Orbital Comics near Leicester Square Tube, in the centre of the capital? Now on, in their gallery, is an exhibition of the work of Des Taylor, a graphic artist who has worked with the likes of FHM, Cosmopolitan, the Ministry of Sound and Universal Music, and in the exhibition you can see pieces from his vast collection of artwork influenced by fashion, classic comics, pop art icons, and his love for screen sirens of the 1950s and 60s. The exhibition runs until the 14th of April, and on Friday the 5th of April, Des will be running a pin-up art class featuring model Nina Hearn, posing in a variety of pin-up and character-inspired outfits. The May exhibition, taking place at Orbital, is focusing on the topic of reappropriating Liechtenstein. Artists Jason Atomic and Ryan Hughes are curating this exhibition in order to coincide with the final weeks of the Liechtenstein exhibition at the Tate Modern. And they're inviting comic book artists who would like to trace back one of Liechtenstein's images to its original source, crediting the original artist in the process, and produce a new version themselves. You can find all information about comic book exhibitions at Orbital at www.orbitalcomics.com, and the shop and exhibition space itself can be found at 8 Great Newport Street, London, WC2H 7JA. Returning to the virtual world, writer and new media expert Charles Creel is launching an Indiegogo campaign for a new app, Comics Thing, and iTunes for Comics, designed for people to have a one-stop shop for both comics they've downloaded off the internet and comics that they've acquired by other means. As ever with Indiegogo campaigns, there are a variety of perks and incentives to contribute, as well as the warm glow you know that you're helping to create an application that will be very useful for people who enjoy reading comics on their digital devices. For more information about the project and the other perks, please go to indiegogo.com/projects/comics-thing-make-your-own-comics-apps. Or if that URL was a little long to take in, follow Charles on his Twitter account, which is twitter.com/CharlesKriel, spelled K-R-I-E-L. And Charles will be one of my guests on next week's show, talking about his plans for the app and the implications it might have for the comics industry. Panel Borders was recorded by Alex Fitch and Cameron Payne, and edited and introduced by Alex Fitch. It's a Panel Borders production, and you can find all previous episodes on my blog, www.panelborders.wordpress.com. I'd like to thank the Thought Bubble Festival for access to Scott C. and Becky and Frank, and the University of Brighton for their recording facilities, used in my interview with Paul O'Connell. And we'll be back at the same time next week. Thanks for listening.